Welcome to Channel 9 of the STRY Radio Network, where stories live.
Welcome to the Ninth Story Podcast. This is Season 6, Episode 6. I am Immortal Alexander.
I'm Jeanette Andromeda, and we are a podcast about writing, and today's topic is, how do you write dialogue?
To help us with this topic is the writer and producer of the audio drama podcast, Sable, Lane Lloyd. Welcome, Lane.
You fools.
It's going to take all our
bringing me back.
I don't know.
I can't finish the joke.
Do it.
No, hi everybody. I'm Lane. Sometimes I make bad jokes that I don't think ahead of.
I want to hear what it was.
I don't even remember. That's the problem. It
was maniacal laugh. You fools! You thought you could talk to me about talking, but I will continue to talk forever.
I think you're like something about having you back.
We've got you back.
Oh. Well, you're just morons for having me back on the show.
Fine. We'll take you.
I don't know. You entertain us, so now you're here.
I'm nothing if not a dancing chimp.
Yeah.
Yay.
I won't disagree with that.
You're our dancing chimp, and we love you.
It's true.
If you want to see the private videos, just DM me, and I'll give you my private Twitter account.
Lane Lloyd after dark.
We'll feed you granola bars and Fruit Loop shakes. And we'll keep you and love you forever.
That's all I've wanted. Fuck everything. I'm going to move in with you guys.
Yay!
Yay!
Our chairs are less squeaky, so when you're recording, it won't be so distracting.
So, Lane has a podcast called Sable. It's an audio drama podcast, and there's tons and tons and tons and tons of dialogue in there. That's why we thought it'd be great to have Lane come on to talk about how do you actually write dialogue and write it well.
So, Lane, have you always been drawn to writing heavy dialogue stories?
Yes, actually. I remember, might have been ninth grade English class. My teacher at the time was very invested in myself and a friend of mine because we were the only people in English class who I slurred my words there. We were the only people in English class who had any sort of passion for writing. And we were both like, we're going to be novelists when we grow up. Mm-hmm. So she had, had said, hey, you know, every week bring in a chapter of whatever you're working on and we'll talk about it. And I didn't realize it until she had brought it up after reading the stories, but I was more interested in dialogue than descriptors. I was more interested in the speaking part of stories than, what most people would probably go to a novel for, mm-hmm. Very descriptive scenes. I've tried to develop the other one just as much as the dialogue, because I think they're both equally important. But I think with my love of film and TV, I just naturally gravitated towards dialogue. And I wanted to make sure that my dialogue was at least up to my standards.
That's commendable. So, there's a lot of times you generally be reading a book and then there'll be some weird reaction or non-reaction.
Oh, and then I'll just get like angry about it and tell you all about it. Be like, Alex, this character said blah, and it was dumb, and it makes no sense compared to what her inner monologue is. That's one of those things that'll make me just go on a nerd rant is bad dialogue.
Oh, I'm the same exact way. I've stopped watching movies. I've stopped playing games. I've stopped reading books where I thought the dialogue was really bad. Actually, there are a lot of comic book writers that people hold in high regard that I can't read a single fucking thing they write because it just drives me insane. Because I'm just like, no normal human would talk like this.
What do you mean? This is ironic, Batman.
They'll just be climbing up the ladder. Batman, I was just perusing the library the other day when I was contemplating on the history of life and...
Yeah, nope.
It's like you're running from Killer Croc. You don't have enough. You have time to say, "Oh shit," and
and run.
Yeah.
And here's this can of shark repellent I just found. Here you go.
Actually, not to go too far off topic, but I was reading All-Star Batman by Scott Snyder, which is not a bad, comic. That's not one of the bad ones I was talking about. And he brings up shark repellent, and I was very happy. I'm happy when people acknowledge the stupid history of Batman instead of just always being like, no, he's always serious. He's always dark and blah.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Totally.
So, Lane.
We're going to start every question with how do you, so, Lane.
How do you make dialogue feel more natural?
I watch a lot of movies. I also just, I am naturally a listener to conversations. I'm more than likely not interested in what's being said at a coffee shop, but I pay attention to the words someone's using and the way they're saying it. And I kind of use that to influence how I have my characters talk. There was, I can't remember his name, but there was a film director who would actually, and maybe others do this, it's probably just not him, but he would go into Central Park with a recorder, and he would just sit there for hours on end and just record people's conversations. And that's how he made his characters seem more lifelike.
Yeah.
By just stealing it from real life.
I mean he may have copied like things he actually heard.
Yeah.
I mean, as a writer, isn't that kind of what we do regardless? We learn little things, we learn little snippets, and we kind of just mash it all together into something new.
Here's the thing, I would argue that all creators of whatever do that. like art especially, art, you are always copying and stealing something. Mm-hmm. you're using those little pieces to make your own thing, but I hate to be the one to tell you, you're not fully original, and that goes for me too. Like it's how you use the things you've collected,
absolutely,
that make it interesting.
And that's why you just have to keep collecting so that no one figures it out.
Exactly. You
so is the driving force of a conversation always a specific want or need in order to make it a good conversation?
I don't think so.
Ooh.
Maybe it depends on what you're writing, but I don't think every conversation you have your characters in has to necessarily be driving the plot forward or driving you to the next scene or even the next conversation. I think sometimes conversations can be a really good tool to just let you know about the character or characters themselves. I think it can just be used as a character development tool and not always necessarily a plot pusher.
I like to see the conversations where there's more character development happening also, because
yeah.
I think too often conversation becomes a way to gloss over things we'd rather see happen.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, that's another pet peeve of mine when I'm reading a book and then they spend so much time talking about something that we already just saw. It's like, let me tell you the story of, can you just cut that chunk out? Because I don't actually need to relive this.
Yeah.
Especially with your bad storytelling, now that you're just a character telling a story like a person would. So yeah, I agree. I think that's awesome. Though it did surprise me that you don't always feel like there's a specific want. Because sometimes a conversation is just about the character interacting or getting to know them. Not necessarily what is, like, do you always have a purpose when you're speaking, Alex? I don't.
Sometimes I don't even think.
Oh, I know for a fact I don't have a purpose when I talk most of the time.
Just random sounds spelling out of my head. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'll open up the door and just scream,
Don't we all?
Or I'll just, or what I've been doing recently, I'll just scream, John Wick.
You killed my dog part two. Oh my God. So Lane, when developing a character, is envisioning how they will speak one of your first steps in fleshing them out.
I would say subconsciously, yes. I don't know if I like constantly think about how they speak. It does, you know, become important, especially when you're making so many characters. Like I made the fucking mistake of doing. I think the first characters I made for Sable, I didn't worry about, you know, how they spoke or you know, the kind of dialogue they would have. Once I got to like, you know, the third or the fourth character, I was like, maybe I need to find a way to make their voice sound different, and not even like the tone or, you know, the accent, just like how they speak compared to everybody else. I think, you know, after a couple characters, that's when I was like, okay, I really need to pay attention to this, or everyone's just going to sound like Crow.
And what ways would you try to mix up their pattern of speech to help them have a little bit more of a unique voice?
I thought about people I knew in my life and the way they talk, my family especially, because my family is a regular old kaleidoscope of different walks of life. So I pulled a lot of influences from them and also myself. There are a couple characters in there that speak the way I would normally speak.
So Lane.
Yes.
If a conversation starts to feel flat, what do you do to try and improve it?
I think we kind of talked about this. Okay. Not this exact question, but like I brought up like a similar tactic that I did, of how I tend to write things out. With dialogue, if it starts feeling flat, I'll walk away and I'll look like a fucking crazy person and act out the way that I want it to work. Mm-hmm. And I make it even worse for myself because I whisper it the whole time. I'm just
So Lane.
Yes.
How does gender affect the dialogue of your characters?
I don't know if I think about dialogue in terms of gender, and maybe I should. I don't think I do. Huh.
I actually think that's one of the beautiful things about your writing, is because you go from gender neutral to just, you really play with that spectrum. And I do find it interesting that your character's dialogue, just as someone who's listened to a lot of your stories, mm-hmm. they really don't, they don't have a gender basis for how they talk. It's character basis.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right, because I don't know. I I feel bad because I don't have an answer to this.
That is okay. So since you don't change your dialogue based on gender, but you do seem to change it based on when or where they are, because in Sable, you jump to different time periods and realities. How do you change the manner of speech or the verbiage based on when and where they are?
I think the only example I can think of is, Boggs tends to change the way they speak depending on, which version I'm dealing with. And actually I think Boggs is kind of the only character I really went into making different in each reality, because their whole thing was they got into the simulation and they said, well, fuck it, I'm going to spread my personality through every possible universe. So it took on, I just punched my desk for no reason. I got really excited about it. You know, they spread themselves over every possible universe. And so because of that, each one kind of took on a different perspective. So like the first Boggs you meet is kind of a dirty talking detective, mm-hmm. from the you know, like the early 1900s, and the most recent one was kind of this erudite, very serious, no nonsense, wise old sage. And so I had to, you know, you know, the most recent Boggs doesn't cuss as much. The first one cussed like a sailor. And, you know, the first one isn't as smart as the other one. And so you kind of have to play with what kind of words they use, because even though we all like to make fun of it, those of us with higher intelligence always manage to slip in big words because we want to impress people that won't be impressed by it.
Exactly.
What was the most difficult piece of dialogue you've had to write?
I think anytime I get really depressing and I have characters explaining the futility of life, that's always a really bad one for me. I'll actually say writing the good guys is harder for me than writing the villains. I don't know what that says about me, but I have so much more fun writing villains dialogue because I can just be as nasty as I want. Whereas... you know, I like to have characters that are, you know, good. I don't like them being in the morally gray area all the time. Mm-hmm. I find romantic dialogue to be tricky for me, because I try to walk that fine line of, like, not making it too disgustingly sweet, but also not making it sound like two robots are discovering love for the first time and they're just like, I don't know what this is.
What do you think you could do to discover some ways to improve that style of writing for yourself? I'm just thinking, rom-coms don't necessarily tread that line very well, but they poke fun at it.
Yeah.
So you'd works?
You'd have to find, like, a really good one. And those
are hard.
Those don't exist a lot because they're made to pander to what Hollywood thinks women want in a movie.
I'm beautiful and clumsy, and you'll tell me my eyes are gorgeous.
they do that, and then they do the mixture of, don't worry, fellas, we also have some dialogue in here for you. Wink.
Yep.
I pay attention to a lot of monologues to help me. Mm-hmm. To write, and I think you can find some really good romantic stories to pull influences from, while also just, like, paying attention to the way, you know, because we all have friends who are couples, we all have friends who are in couples, you know, because I am who I am, I tend to just listen to the way they talk, even if I'm not paying attention to what they're saying. I try and, you know, pay attention to how they're saying. And I think that's how you can improve, at least if you're writing in my way. That's the problem with giving writing advice, is that I can sit here and go, hey, this is how I do this. Mm-hmm. It might not work for you.
Writing is such a personal craft, though. And
it is. It is.
Even though, like, it is very personal, just hearing how someone approaches their way. Yeah. Usually can help go, oh, light bulb, I won't do it exactly that way, but what if I tried? And then suddenly you can make some progress.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, that's how I, you know, improved my writing. I paid attention to what other writers were doing, and even if it didn't work out for me, I was like, oh, okay, well, this gets my brain working in a new way that helps me solve this other problem that I had that I didn't even know I had. But... yeah, for the most part, writing is a lot of you just have to figure out what works for yourself.
Yep.
Do you find yourself accidentally eavesdropping on conversations as, quotation marks, research?
Oh, all the time. And it annoys the people I'm with because sometimes I will get, like, really interested in it. And I don't mean to. I legitimately don't mean to get into people's business, but sometimes I'll just be listening. I go, oh, man, she's really giving it to him. He's really pissed. I got to write this down. These were some really good insults. I need to keep these for later.
How do you keep track of those insults and things? Do you keep an actual, like, notebook with you, or do you just, like, jot them down on your phone or something?
No, I'll just keep repeating them to myself silently because I'll just be like, oh, man, this was so funny.
That's awesome. And then that's your mantra until you get home. What aspects of a conversation creates the most excitement for you?
I like writing monologues. Monologues really get me excited, and I don't know why. because I get like the background music in my head and I'm thinking about how the camera zooms in on it if it was a scene from a movie, and I'm just like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm really sticking it, I'm really bringing my point home. It never, it doesn't work out as much as I wish it would, but
you still aim for him. I mean, monologues are interesting because they really have to have a certain rhythm to them so that you stay engaged in them.
Yeah, I would say monologues need to be pushing the plot forward, mm-hmm. in some regard, or else it just, even I'll go like, okay, get off the stage, boo.
That makes sense, because you can only hear so much about a character when they're monologuing.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it says how narcissistic they are. I'm thinking of Hamlet at the moment, because a lot of his monologues about, oh, woe is me, and what is the state of life? I am your average emo teenager, as it continues to be true. But it really just says a lot about how trapped in his own head all of his monologues show.
Yeah. I'm just your average emo teen.
Back in the day with fancy words, that's all.
Back in the day with my blood fidget spinners.
You kids these days and your fidget spinners.
Watch me do a bone dab. I'm 25, I'm still young. Don't mistake me for someone old, please.
Isn't like the hoop with the stick the original fidget spinner?
No, Alex. The original,
yes, Grandpa.
The original fidget spinner. You ready for this?
Uh-huh.
It's your hands.
What?
Oh my God!
You just wiggle your fingers and you're fidgeting. My
God.
So Lane.
Yes.
Are there authors whose dialogue writing you really admire?
I really like Joe Abercrombie's. He does the First Law trilogy, and there's a few other books that aren't in that trilogy but are in that world. I think he writes really great dialogue. I'm missing out on her name right now, and I can't think of it. She writes Miss Marvel. I love the way she writes characters. I think her dialogue's a lot of fun. I'll say it's a lot of fun to read. Brian K. Vaughan, I really like how he writes dialogue for like Saga and some of the other stuff he's done. I like Hideo Kojima's dialogue, but for the different reasons.
Yep.
Because they're delightfully bad.
Yep.
Sometimes epically bad dialogue can become an art form of its own.
Well, I will keep this mindset to the fucking grave. I will not change this viewpoint. Kojima is a fucking genius, but he goes about things the dumbest way possible. Like if you actually sat down and looked at the dialogue he wrote, and you know, I mean, some of it's nonsense. Like some of it just doesn't have a purpose. I'm not going to sit here and say every. Every line of dialogue is something brilliant, but like he's trying to say something really poignant and you can get to that point and you're like, oh man, that's really great. But the way the characters say it is so delightfully stupid and just no one talks like this. Snake, do you think love blooms even on the battlefield? Like, like who the fuck says that?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Like when fucking Snake talks about taking care of your cardboard box, it's really dumb, but you can't help but be enraptured by it because you're just like, this dude really loves his cardboard box.
You got to maintain that thing. That's one thing I never thought about. You'd have to put some duct tape on it. You got to make sure it doesn't get too wet. Otherwise, it gets soggy.
You got to maintain your box. Take care of your box.
So, speaking of things that you're reading, Lane.
Mm-hmm.
That's a video game, so that's a playing.
Or playing, sorry. I'm.
Nope, well, she's not technically wrong because there's a really shitty novelization of Metal Gear Solid 1.
There you go, see? Not technically wrong. But what sources do you like to pull from for inspiration? We've kind of touched on a few already, but I'd like to hear some more.
Okay, if we want some more, I'm not one of those people that thinks he's like the greatest director of all time or anything, but I really like how Quentin Tarantino writes conversation. I wouldn't say it's realistic in any way, but like that style is really interesting, especially in Pulp Fiction. That kind of pulpy dialogue is really good. And it changes. Like I think Hateful Eight, you know, the characters speak in a way different way than Pulp Fiction, even a Django, you know. Like he uses the settings and the types of movies that he's paying homage to and mixing them in with like a more modern flourish. Anything BioWare writes to an extent, not Mass Effect Andromeda.
Nope.
That pile of flaming garbage. Anyway, we're not going to talk about how Lane felt real disappointment this year in 2017. But yeah, BioWare's use of dialogue, Bethesda's, especially like Fallout. Even if I'm not like taking exact references from them, I remember those characters and the way they talked and how their dialogue brought out their character, like Three Dog from Fallout 3, you know. So I pull from a lot of things all at once.
Did you get to play The Last of Us?
Oh yeah, I should have mentioned them too. Yeah, Naughty Dog is also really good at storytelling, but The Last of Us, I think, especially. And, you know, Uncharted's all right. It's just it's not my type of. I'm not really into archaeology stories. I was kind of speaking to a friend earlier today about something that kind of alludes to dialogue in also games. Arkane Studios, the guys who make or the people who make the Dishonored series and the new Prey. Mm-hmm. They are really, really good at creating atmospheric dialogue. Like, I'm not going to say every piece of dialogue is important in the way that, like, oh, this explains this, but they are really good at making dialogue that makes you go, okay, wow, this world is actually lived in. And, like, they're living people. Prey especially, like, you learn so much more from like dialogue and audio logs. And I think that's another reason why dialogue is so important, because it can just do a lot of tangential world building for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, like Dark Souls kind of does that. It's more vague, and like you get most of the stories out of item descriptions, but you know, some of the things the characters say and how they say them can make you go, oh, wow, I wonder if this has any sort of connection to this thing, or this explains, you know, a fucking painting in a castle that I saw, and that's cool. I didn't know that I needed that information, but I'm glad that I have it now.
Yeah, that's really cool. When you, like, it's like when I was playing the Metroid Prime series games, like, and you would just find things through logs. And it would explain a lot more about the world and build the world for you, not through direct cinematics or anything, but through just exposition, through, you know, logs and dialogue and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and if done right, you know, you don't need them to make a great story, but if you do pay attention to them, it can make a great story even better.
Yeah, it really can. Though, on the opposite end of the spectrum, sometimes having like a moment of silence can really change a conversation up when like someone just doesn't respond or something.
Oh yeah.
So how often do you use the technique of just adding some silence or adding some space to a dialogue scene, and when do you like to use that?
I use the silence when like there's some heavy information given or there's a plot twist given. I think it's really effective there. I naturally just have a lot of pauses between things because I don't have music in the show. But it was one of the things I learned early on because you guys listened to the first season. Mm-hmm. there was no pause. It was just, I was going like at a speed of like 60 miles an hour trying to get everything out.
Yeah.
And I think the story was lessened by that, because especially with the dialogue, you didn't have any time to let that have weight in what was going on. It was just, and I'm already on the next thing. Mm-hmm. I think especially when you're narrating and you've gotten to dialogue, I think it's important to leave that pause in there. And once again, it doesn't have to be with everything. Just like if you want a particular sentence or a particular phrase to stick, I think you should use silence to sort of let people process that.
Mm-hmm. So it's not even necessarily just for your character to have a moment and think, it's about having your audience have a chance to really process what just happened. So that mm-hmm, makes sense. Absolutely. Silence is a moment for us to catch up.
Yeah.
So Lane?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you ever play with a character's body language to change the meaning of their words?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think body language and tone both play together to get a message across. Cause you know, I know for a fact, my parents said it all the time. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And sometimes it can even be how you look while you're saying it. And, you know, sometimes we're not thinking about the physical. We're thinking about, you know, the tone and making ourselves sound sincere. But, you know, we give off a body language that's like, I'm not really worried about what you're saying, and I'm not taking anything that you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I've mastered my tone in such a way that you'd think I was being sincere, but you know, then you see me leaning against a table reading a book, and you know that I'm not really paying attention.
I think says a lot.
Yeah, like I think body language plays more into it than we'd like to think. That's why I think it would be terrible for me to be like an actual like on stage or on camera actor.
Yeah,
because I do not pay attention to my own body language at all. And
so your parents were telling you that for a reason, huh?
probably, yeah.
Oh.
Well, and I also just, I had a problem growing up where I did not think about how I was saying something. And, you know, I kind of in a way wasn't hearing my own voice. And so sometimes you're like, you sound annoyed. It's like, well, I'm not, but...
And now you're a better voice actor because of it. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Lane.
Yes.
We've again touched on this just a little bit, but what are some warning signs of really badly written dialogue?
I would say my number one is overly stereotypical dialogue. And borderline racist and sexist. You can tell when someone's being not great with a certain race or a certain gender of people. You know, I can't remember the name of it, but we have that test where it's like, if two women are in a scene and they talk about boys, you know, if you're a really bad writer, you tend to throw in a lot of yo dogs and honkies when you're writing a black character. I think those are my number ones, because a lot of the time I can try and muster through someone overly explaining something through dialogue that no normal human being would go through the process of saying. Mm-hmm. Pandering, pandering dialogue, racist dialogue, sexist dialogue, I can't. Sometimes we don't think about it. Sometimes, especially if we're not part of a certain group, we don't think about how we're writing, and we, you know, need to grow into that. Mm-hmm. But you can tell when someone just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest pet peeve, is because once again, no one actually talks like that. Like there's no black person that actually talks like that.
Nope. Unless they're being facetious, in which case, yeah.
Yeah, unless they're making a point. Yeah, like if they're making a point, then yeah. But like, no one is naturally just talking like that. No woman is naturally talking like that. And That's the biggest thing. There's some where it also just sounds stilted.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a tip I learned in writing, which when I first heard about it, I was like, well, this is bullshit. This is just English professors being really uptight about things. But, you know, when you can say don't say do not, you know, when, you know, say can't instead of, you know, cannot, because sometimes that comes stilted in the dialogue, at least in my opinion. I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right, because if a character's saying, I cannot do this, they're either a specific kind of character or they cannot get into character and therefore are wooden puppets.
Yeah.
I won't do that. I don't believe that. I do not believe this. Oh, okay.
I can't remember specifically, but there was there were a couple audiobooks being made for a series, and the narrator would just straight up not say, you know, if there was cannot, he would just say can't, because I think he knew, like, if I say cannot, I'm just gonna sound
wooden,
like a robot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely something that, as I've been going back into some of my older writing, like, I've been going mm-hmm. back through old stories and just laughing at some of my, I was totally guilty of using big vocabulary words for the sake of using vocabulary words. When I wrote a story about a clandestine cat. Why? Because mm-hmm. I just learned the word clandestine. or I would try to use my essay writing rules to write dialogue, and it just I cannot believe that I wrote these things that do not work. But I was definitely guilty of that, but it's kind of nice to see that as my personal writing has progressed at least a little bit, I've mm-hmm. it's started to sound more natural. And I think working in theater and acting helped it a lot, because as I was speaking things, then I realized, oh, wait, this feels weird. Why does this feel weird? Oh yeah. Because they wrote it weird. Oh.
Yeah, I think you have to, like, have some sort of conversational skill mm-hmm. to really write, you know, good dialogue.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't, and I'm not saying I'm a social person at all, but I talk to at least one person a day, you know. But if you're, like, completely outside of that and you don't, like, speak to anybody, I can't imagine you being able to create, you know, really a great dialogue, because how are you going to know when the flow doesn't sound right?
Right, because even if you speak it out loud, you're not going to know.
And I should say it's not impossible, because there are obviously people who cannot speak. Oh, totally. I'm saying, as someone who can speak, if I did not use that skill, I don't know how I would be able to perfect it.
I did not hit her. I did not.
I did. Everybody needs to watch Tommy Wiseau, because he is a genius. I got back from the doctors. It's definitely cancer.
It's definitely cancer. Well, they have cures for that every day.
Oh, I fucking love the little nod she gives after she says it's definitely cancer. She's just so proud of herself. Like, yeah, I got breast cancer.
It's definitely, like, cancer.
Yeah, and the other, like, her daughter nods with her. And I was like, what kind of fucking aliens are you? Everybody in this movie's bad.
I think she calls it the cancer.
The cancer.
Yeah, it's definitely the cancer.
That, now talk about some weird dialogue. That entire movie is all just super awkward dialogue scenes. Yeah.
How's your sex life?
You're so funny. Oh, hi, Dougie.
You're my best customer. You're my favorite customer.
Yeah, oh god.
You want some bad dialogue, folks? Go watch The Word if you haven't
seen The Room.
The Room.
You worked on The Word.
Oh, wait. I worked on The Word.
You worked on The Word. That's a different movie.
That actually had good dialogue. Nailed it.
Oh, I see what you were doing. You were trying to do some promoting there. Because people would go like, oh my God, what's The Word? It apparently has really bad dialogue. I have to watch it. Oh no, it's actually really great.
I was totally bamboozled.
Take all of my money.
Ah, damn. Bamboozled by podcasters again.
Ah, those marmy podcasters.
And they're bamboozling.
I just feel like I need to use random words now. So, yeah. Thank you so much, Lane, for talking to us today and talking with us about your writing and your process. Where can people find more from you and more of your work? More of you and more of your work.
Well, if you want to find me on the Twitter, where I have a link to the other my podcast Twitters, you can find me at @the_LaneLloyd. I'm Pansexual Healing. That's my username.
Yes, it is.
If you want to find Sable, you can find it on sable.libsyn.com. And if you want to find Impromptu Fiction with Lane and Friends, that is, let me pull that up right now because I forgot what I made that website's title. Oh, that's just impromptufic@libsyn.com.
There you go.
Yeah. See, I did it.
Good job, Lane.
Yeah.
So, again, thank you for joining us today. And I'm sorry we went so far off the handle.
I'm not.
Slash not entirely.
Not.
I'm glad that John
Wick is now.
It's almost
like exactly what happened last time.
I know, right? I still really enjoyed that. That's why we brought you back, because you're fun.
Aw.
Also intelligent. It's a good combo.
Well, sorry. That's the first time I've been called intelligent. I'm going to write that on the board right now.
Maybe we should just switch it up.
Someone are think I'm smart.
Yay!
Yeah. Yay!
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much, Lane Lloyd, for coming on our show today. If you enjoyed today's show and you want to find out more about this particular episode, you can go to our website, and that's podcast.9thstory.com. That's the number 9thstory.com/S6E06. That's season 6, episode 6. Please tune in next week as we'll have on the author of Ella Enchanted, Gail Carson Levine. We are super excited to have Gail on our show. We'll be talking with Gail about the topic, how do you create magic through words? Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, stay creative, my friends.
Nothing but fidget spinners and pumpkin spiced lattes on this episode.